This is WHQR Presents, where we platform interesting people and perspectives from around our region. Today's show is From a Poet's Point of View, featuring artists organized by Speak Your Piece NC, hosted by Melanie Nicole, a.k.a. Carrie Asada, and featuring guests Robert Bellamy, a.k.a. Scale Hamhock the Poet, and Makeda Baker, a.k.a. Mama Makeda. This episode, entitled An Artist's Duty, was recorded on November 6th to discuss what it means to be a poet or other type of artist, and reflecting on the words of James Baldwin and Nina Simone, as well as the legacy of the 1898 coup and massacre here in Wilmington. This program does contain some challenging topics and explicit language, so while we hope you will enjoy it, we encourage some listener discretion. And a quick note, while WHQR is committed to sharing voices from around our community, the views and opinions expressed on this podcast series don't necessarily represent WHQR.
Good afternoon, and I want to thank everyone for tuning in to From a Poet's Point of View. My name is Carrie Asada, and I'll be your host this afternoon, and I'm so excited to have with me my partner in crime, Scale Hamhock, the poet, the co-founder of Speak Your Piece. And we also have Mama Makeda, who is not only a mentor, but she is a friend and another mama in my life who I'm just so happy to have more than one mama. How is everybody doing today?
Doing great. How about you?
I'm doing great, Mama Makeda. And how about you, Scale Hamhock the Poet?
I'm doing great today. Thank you very much.
Great. I'm so happy to hear that. And today is November the 6th. And so this is the first Thursday after the election. And it's amazing that when the election is going on, it's a certain type of energy that you feel. And as soon as the votes are in, it's like the energy drops, and it just feels like you kind of just are going back to, you know, operating in the norm. So I just want to congratulate the candidates in Wilmington and in other places who are exactly where they want to be in office. So make sure you look out for the people. This is what you signed up for to everyone. So make sure that you keep good on your word. And with that being said, I would like to talk about some historical events and relate them to poetry. And before I get into that, I just want to share something that James Baldwin said. He said that the poet or the revolutionary is there to articulate the necessity, but until the people themselves apprehend it, nothing can happen. Perhaps it can be done without the poet, but it certainly can't be done without the people. The poet and the people get on generally very badly, and yet they need each other. The poet knows it sooner than the people do. The people usually know it after the poet is dead. But that's all right. The point is to get your work done, and your work is to change the world. And let's give some snaps to James Baldwin. Because I personally really love James Baldwin. I love the way that he thought, and I'm just so thankful that he left so much here for us to still grasp to and to connect to and learn from. So, Mama Makeda, what is your opinion about what I just read?
You have your questions. Well, you know, James Baldwin, during the time when he was alive, and it was I will say that perhaps it was even a bit rougher time than it is right now for people of melanin content, but he always had his pulse on what was happening. He was a sensitive soul. Mm. He was an inquisitive soul, and he was an unafraid soul to look at things and see them as they were and to speak that. And when he said that to be a Negro in America is to be in a constant state of rage, I think that's one of his quotes, he definitely had his finger on the pulse of melanin people. And the artist is so very important because the artist, especially the poet, who, unlike the sculptor or the person who draws on canvas, the artist actually uses words. Mm. And the artist actually says what others may think or others may feel, but are hesitant to verbalize that. And the artist has the audacity, I call it poetic audacity, to speak not only from their soul, but to speak what's on their mind, and to do it unapologetically, and to do it boldly, you know, with a lot of audacity. And when I was younger, I didn't pay a lot of attention to James Baldwin. Mm. But now that I'm older and can see him in a different light, I see to the level of his soul's, what's the word I'm looking for? The angst and the anxiety and the sensitivity of who he was.
Wow. And so I want to ask you, Askel Hamhock the poet, you know that I love Nina Simone, and she is just another phenomenal artist. And as far as I'm concerned, when you write songs, you are also a poet, you know, because you are carrying a word with you, and that's what poetry is. It just happens to be the words are transferred into lyrics, but the similarities are connecting. They're definitely cousins, poetry and lyric writing, if they're not brother and sister. But I did want to ask you, Askel Hamhock the poet, Nina Simone makes a comment, and I'm not going to say it verbatim, but she mentions that as far as she is concerned, it is the artist's duty to reflect the times. Mm. Can you tell me in your words what stands out about that statement and what does it mean to you?
Mm. Wow. Well, an artist is a person that observes life. And they look at it from a total different perspective from the normal person. And when they see it, they can feel it. And feeling that, it leads into expressing it. And then you have to write about it. You have to tell what you saw, tell the world what is going on. And you want to tell the world what is going on because you want the future of our young'uns to understand what you have seen. And, you know, times have changed, but people are still pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. And they're still doing the same things. It hasn't really changed that much. And when I write, I write about what I see, what I feel, what I hear, what I know. I'm writing about what's going on into the world. And I express that into my poetry because I want them to know that I feel what is going on.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And let's give you some snaps for that. And also some snaps for Mama Makeda, if I might have missed it earlier. Thank you so much for sharing that. And, you know, when we think about how artists do reflect the times, you have to look around at the times. And as you mentioned earlier, Mama Makeda and Robert, we have a different journey or a different fight ahead than our ancestors, but what we're doing is continuing the work because we do have it a little easier than what they had, but We're still fighting the same fight to be free, to be recognized as humans, and just to be able to, live peacefully, live organically and naturally as you should be able to live, because the earth takes care of everyone and everything if man will just step away and let the earth do what the earth should be doing. And so I want to talk about a brother who went through a lot. And as we know, Mama Nina talked about the duty of the artist. I want to talk about Delbert Tibbs. Delbert Tibbs is a black man who was exonerated. He was exonerated from a crime that he did not commit. It was back in 1974. He was arrested for murder. And he was hitchhiking in Florida about 220 miles away from the actual crime scene. But, of course, you know, he fit the bill because you have a black man, and that's all that you need to be guilty is just to bump into any old black man that you see on the streets and decide that, you know, you're the one. And that's what happened with Delbert Tibbs. And once he became exonerated after spending some time locked up in jail, he began to live out his life as the artist that he was, and the work that he got into, it did reflect the times. And the gentleman that we have here today with us, Scale Ham Hock the Poet, had an opportunity to bring some of his words to life in a production done by Big Dog Entertainment, which is ran by Steve Vernon. He's a artist here in Wilmington, North Carolina, and he tackles a lot of social issues through his work, and he puts on plays. So I'd like to hear a little bit of Delbert Tibbs, his work, from Scale Ham Hock the Poet. Would you mind sharing a piece of his work with us?
Yes, I would. I would like to share the poem that actually got me the part in the play, to actually play the character of Delbert Tibbs, and which was the main character. And I was so happy that Steve gave me the opportunity. It was actually my my first play, and it was my first play. On free land. I was in a play in prison. Okay. This is not the place of thought that does not end in concreteness. It is not easy to be too open or too curious. It is dangerous to dwell too much on things, to wonder who or why or when, to wonder how is dangerous. How do we, the people, get out of this hole? What's the way to fight? Might I do like Richard Raff and Langston Hughes and them? No. It's not easy to be a poet here. But yet I sing. And when I hear this poetry, it reflects so much on today. And it's telling us, you know, we just can't sing. We're going to have to protest. We're going to have to get out there on the streets and let this government know that we are human and humanity is going to be a continuation, and America will not stop that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much for that, Scale Ham Hock the Poet. I want to ask you, Mama Makeda, when you think about poetry and you think about Langston Hughes and bringing it forward to this time in 2025, what are the similarities that Langston Hughes is speaking on versus maybe some of your own poetry? Where are the similarities?
Ooh, whoa. You were speaking earlier and talking about, well, we said that perhaps times have, the circumstances of the times are maybe not quite as brutal or harsh as they were before, but the system itself has not changed. Mm-hmm. The system of oppression and racism has not changed. It is the people's response to the system of racism and oppression that may or may not have changed. So that what we are seeing now is definitely what Langston Hughes mm-hmm. and all those previous poets saw. However, what they saw back then is not quite, or maybe not quite necessarily what we are seeing, as they say, live, what they call it, in real time, in real time. So the poet, the soul of the poet does not change. And because we live in a climate where the system of oppression and racism has not changed, the soul of the poet becomes ever more important. You asked a question earlier, the Scalham Hawk, and journalists report the news. Mm-hmm. They report what happened. But poets not only report it, but they interpret it. Mm-hmm. And they interpret it with their humanity within, so that the Langston Hughes and the poets of today, we still have to not only report, but we have to interpret from that humanity arena. We have to report it and put our soul into interpreting it. In that, if I can just give an example, back in, I think it was 1898, and it was here in South Carolina, where there had been a Black postmaster appointed in Lake City, South Carolina. The surrounding whites in Lake City were so angry at him, this Black man being appointed as a postmaster, and they were after him to resign. Mm-hmm. And he didn't resign because he was appointed by the government to be a postmaster. And when he refused to resign, in the middle of the night, a mob showed up at his house and started shooting at his house with the family inside, and then set the house on fire. And as the family was coming out, they shot the family members coming out of the burning house. He was cradling his infant daughter, and he and the infant daughter were murdered. Other family members were shot, but they survived. And the surviving family members were put on trial for what the white folks did. And you can read what happened, but you read a sterile version of it. That an angry mob descended on his house. And they even called it a lynching. That they descended on his house, angry that he was as the postmaster. But that's kind of like the sterile version of it. You don't get the version of it from the Fraser Baker side. You don't get the version of it from these whites who were defying the governmental system and allowing this government employee to do what he was appointed to do. So the poet's job is to step in between what the facts are and what the humanity is. Wow. And to report minus the humanity is to sterilize things. And the poet doesn't sterilize stuff.
Wow. Thank you, Mama Makeda. That was a great way to interpret what a poet does. A poet does not sterilize. So I guess
doesn't sanitize it.
So we can say that we are the straight moonshine, if you want to metaphorically connect that to what we do. We are powerful, potent, and raw. And that can certainly ruffle a whole lot of feathers and also create a path for change, because that's what words do. And this is why, as you stated earlier, when you were speaking about journalists, just the power of writing, the power of poetry can transform a nation. And so for anyone who may be tuning in to listen today, I would challenge you to write a poem about how you see the world, and then to write, what can we do to change the world that we live in? Because once you can see something, you know that you can change it. You can transform it into something better. But you have to be able to be truthful with yourself and say what you see, and then write about how things can be better. So we have to keep writing. And with you hitting on something, Mama Makeda, that happened in the 19th century, I definitely want to bring up that this November 10th is going to be 127 years since the coup d'etat that occurred right here in Wilmington, where it was the first ever authorized government takeover. And what happened here has definitely shaped the city. And it's not anything that's taught in school. You know, so many people live right here in Wilmington, North Carolina, and they don't know anything about 1898. In fact, I didn't know anything about what happened here in Wilmington in 1898 when I moved here from Brooklyn, New York. I didn't do any research. And I would say that living in Wilmington has helped me to evolve to the person that I'm still becoming right now, because I could feel the energy of this city. And the poet on the inside of me, it's like I didn't have a choice. I didn't seek out to do this. I feel like the times and the trouble that's happening in this world and in this city sought me to speak. That's how I feel. And I would like to ask Scale Hamhock the poet to share some poetry related to 1898. Would that be okay?
Oh, yes, yes.
Okay, make sure you give us the name of your poem.
Okay. Pretty much every year since I've written this poem, really about 4 years ago, I have tried to read this poem around this time. Oh. And there are forces that will not give me an opportunity to read this poem. So now that Lainey has her own stage and WHQR has given us a platform, I've been able to get this poem out, and I've been able to read it so some people can hear it. And basically, I think Mama Makeda was here the last time when I read this poem, and I think she read one of her poems that was really dramatic. I really loved that poem. What was that poem, Mama Makeda? It is America something.
America is an insane asylum.
Yeah, America is an insane asylum. Yes.
An insane asylum.
Yes, that's the poem. Oh, I love that poem, Mama Makeda, and I am going to practice it and read that poem. But today I brought my 1898 poem called "More of the Truth, Reheated Lies," and when I think of this poem, I think about your poem, and it's called "More of the Truth, Reheated Lies." Cities burned down. True facts. Cities burned down to the ground. Negro businesses burned down. Original black owners never found. Beaten, shot, hang, chasing the river for standing their ground.
while working hard for the wealth they found. That was really the hate and the talk of the town. Not being able to keep a black man down. Not being able to keep a black man down. Houses burned down. Black man dragged in front of his wife and kids. And most of the haters was just clowning around. Churches burned down. What God did they serve and where were they bound? Preachers ran out of town or somewhere just hanging around. And no one cared to cut them down. Mm. Newspaper owners had to sneak out of town. They found so many ways just to keep us down. Crosses burned in our yard after we had worked so hard. Even in 1898, I am an American too. We died for this country just like you. Mm. So what if you a patriot, Dan? What the hell am I? I'm a damn patriot too. We fight under the same American flag, live or die. And you continue to hate me. I don't know why. I really don't understand why. Because Negroes was one of the main reasons most white people that came here to America got a piece of the pie. And you know there's no lie. You know there's no lie. The real truth will never die. And all we want, too, is to be treated equal like any human and get our piece of this damn American pie. Sometimes I cry. I can't understand why. And I'm not shy. No, I'm not shy. Even when my people had to hold their heads down and not look a white man in his eye. Today, I know I would die. America said this was the land of the free and the land of the brave. Do these words not matter on the roads that we also help pave? No, I'm not saved. No, I'm not saved. Look at how you behave. So what if I was born in what you believe to be a jungle and you, I believe, was raised in a cave? We are all still riding the same wave that God gave. That's right, the same wave that God gave. No race of humans should have ever been enslaved. I can't understand why. I know I can't understand why. That way, and that's the way that any man of God could behave. Even after we got emancipated, or even when we were emancipated, some racists killed Abe. Yeah, some racists killed Abe. Thank God for whatever reason our freedom was saved. We were enslaved for over 400 or more years, and we still don't hate you. And you know what you do. Everything we got, we worked twice as hard for it, too. But why would I try to stop you? Why would you organize a coup when 99% of everything came back to you? And that's only something real haters would do. Stop a black man's progress by organizing a coup. The United States government is still carrying this scar. And yes, even today, they know it was a coup d'etat. The government know who they are or who they were, but this is another price that we must bear, knowing all the corruption and hate that was there. Did anyone really care that black Wilmingtonians never got back their share? Because after 1898, destruction, riots, and massacres, black businesses were rare. Thank God it wasn't like Black Wall Street when they were allowed to draw bombs from the air. Even there, I think the government was aware. I really blame the government for all this shit because they wanted 99% of everything, but only a small percentage wanted it. And when America got started, it was hard to quit because the white man felt they shouldn't have to labor or work. And that's something they did admit. The slave worked where the white man sit. That's right. The slave worked where the white man sit. So when slavery was over, the white man had a fit because enslaving anyone black to them was totally legit. I mean, totally legit. So to them, it was like if you're black, you get what you get. It was as if, so much as if the shoe fit. But the black man never quit, even though the American government never gave them shit. The so-called Negro, they started with nothing. That's right. The so-called Negro started with nothing, and with nothing made something out of it. Cities burned down to the ground. Negro businesses burned down. Original black owners never found. Churches burned down. Preachers ran out of town. Houses burned down. A cross burned in your yard after you have worked so hard. What's wrong with these people, Lord? Why can't we all live like humans under one accord and to love all humans and thank you, Lord? Slavery was bad enough, but for the black man in Wilmington in 1898, it was extremely hard. Officials that worked for the government helped massacre maybe thousands of blacks, stealing their wealth like flipping a card. Change chased in the river that they call Cape Fear. And so many blacks didn't even know this all these years living here. Mm-hmm. So let me make myself clear. In 1898, a black massacre was here. Thank you very much.
Hotep. I love the voice that you used for that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mother Cooper. I'm not Mother Cooper. Mom McKayla. Thank you so much.
Hotep.
All right.
Hotep.
Wow, thank you, Robert. That was really good.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Ben, when you re-listen to this, can you take out Mother Cooper?
That's Lainey's mother.
Yeah.
I had it on my mind. I don't know why.
It's okay. Because right. We're talking about, we hear what the mama is. Yes, you know, yes. The presence of the mama, they both illuminate the same beautiful light.
Yeah.
And Mama Makeda, you know, I know that you're a Malcolmite. That's what I would like to say. Because I feel like I am a Malcolmite, too. And one of the things that Malcolm says is that truth is on the side of the oppressed. And it is. And the truth, it comes in the writing. It comes in the poetry, especially from the poet's perspective. And so I wanted to ask you, Mama Makeda, about this quote that Malcolm X said. He said that the same man who has oppressed us all our lives is going to be our liberator. That's not liberation. That's insanity. Can you elaborate on that quote that Malcolm stated?
Well, Malcolm was so true about that. Good grief. It's kind of like, and to make an analogy, it's kind of like the majority of black people in this country are Christians. And we are Christians by default because our parents were that, and their parents were that, and their parents were that because their enslavers were that. And that is the religion that was handed down or forced upon us. In fact, one of the reasons for during enslavement they used was to remove the African from Africa and put him in the proximity of white folks so that he could be Christianized and saved. And for Malcolm to say that, repeat the quote again.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Malcolm said that.
Yeah.
The same man who has oppressed us all our lives is going to be our liberator. That's not liberation. That's insanity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, to go back to that analogy of we are Christians by default because the enslavers were Christians and enslavement was a Christian construct. And when Malcolm said to rely upon your oppressor, to rely upon your enslaver to set you free, Dr. John Henry Clark said that they're never going to educate you to take power away from them. So it becomes incumbent upon those who are oppressed to take back their energy, to take back what was taken through oppression and racism and enslavement so that you literally become your own savior. You literally become your own liberator. And that's exactly what Mama Harriet Tubman did. She became her own liberator. She did not wait for someone to come or wait on death to set her free. She became her own liberator. And Malcolm is has always let us know that to rely upon the same person who enslaved you, who dehumanized you, who demonized you, to rely upon that same person to help you is you know, who's crazier, the person who oppressed you or you looking to the oppressor for a change? The only person who can change that narrative and that trajectory is who? The person themselves, ourselves. Absolutely. And it's up to us to change the narrative and the trajectory. And to still wait upon a savior is self-defeating. In fact, that's a part of the insanity equation, waiting upon someone to come and be the savior. We each have a job and a work to do where we must liberate ourselves. Mama Harriet liberated herself and then came back and brought some more out, because she wasn't just satisfied with her own liberation. And it's the same thing with us. We must become our own liberators and then reach back and bring some more out. Malcolm, in everything that Malcolm taught on and everything that he said, he was 1,001% correct. And yet religion has taught us to love those who persecute you. Religion has taught us to forgive 70 times 70, which equals 490 times. And religion has taught us to be passive in the face of violence and in the face of brutality and diabolicalness. And that, again, is part of that insanity equation.
Wow. Thank you so much, Mama Makeda, for that truthful explanation. And also, I just wanted to, and y'all got to remind me, you know, sometimes it's, you know, when you're speaking and you're interviewing and you're asking questions, sometimes you just forget. Can we just show Scale Hemhock the poet some love for his poem? Let's give him some snaps.
Thank you. Thank you.
You know, Scale Hemhock.
Yes, for the great job that you did. And absolutely. Mama Makeda, thank you so much for your input. I did want to ask you, do you have a piece of poetry that you would like to share with us that is kind of, you know, connected to the vibe?
You know, I do have tons and tons of poetry. I'm looking at, I have one called Ode to Jim Crow.
Mm.
And another one called They, T-H-E-Y, They. I was kind of debating as to which one, given the circumstances and the conversation, which one might be a little bit more appropriate. I think I'll do They.
Okay.
If that's okay.
Yeah, They is okay.
They silenced our talking drums, not allowing us to play nor hear none. They stole our land so we had no home, forcing us to have to wander and roam. They stole all of our native tongue, and then from trees us they hung. They stole from us our traditional clothes. Naked they called us bucks, winches and hoes. They stole our names and called us slaves, deprived us of our humanity, then called us depraved. They stole from us our natural foods we eat, leaving us with shitterlings and pig's feet. Mm. They stole from us the children from our wombs, calling us pickaninnies, jigaboos, and coons. They stole our laughter, making us cry, taking our will to live, leaving us wanting to die. They stole our creativity, taking everything we had, called us devils, cursed, evil, and bad. They stole our color in order to give themselves a tan, whipped us till bloody, then put on us their brand. They stole all of our artifacts, hiding them in museums, hidden from view so that we can't even see them. They kill off animals for trophies from every nation, then campaign to save them by creating fake foundations. They stole all our gold, minerals, and every resource, called it diplomatic negotiations, but by military force.
Mm.
They stole our history and tried to make it theirs. They are the authors of chaos, Isfet, and nightmares. They took this brand of behavioral destruction that also included death, disease, and dysfunction. They forever accused us of committing their crimes in order to hang innocent Blacks time after time. They burned down our homes, shooting us as we fled, even shot our babies, making sure everybody was dead. They are from the Ice Age, hence no feelings. It's why they revel in no conscious killings. So they, just who are they? I'm going to tell you, I'm going to say. I'll say it loudly, and I'll tell. They are the damned, the children from hell. They are spawns of Antarctica, the Ice Age, full of fraudulent fear, anger, envy, and rage. This is who they are, lacking any souls, thieves, deceivers, and murderers who stole. Hotep.
Wow. Hotep.
Hotep. Wow, Hotep, Mama Makeda. Thank you so much for that poem that, once again, you're doing the work of a poet.
We are continuing the work.
Yes.
We are continuing the work. We are the Maya Angelous and the James Baldwins and the all the others that have been mentioned. We are the embodiment and the continuation of their energies.
Wow.
And poets don't just report facts. We report feelings and humanity.
Wow. Thank you, Mama Makeda. Let's show some love to Mama Makeda for sharing that beautiful poem. And I have a piece that I'm going to share that's called Don't Be Mad at the Poets, Be Mad at the Systems, the institutions that cause division, following the footsteps of their ancestors, making death a cocktail of desire, placing history under fire, calling the truth tellers liars. This is America. This is what we wake up to. So whatever you do, don't be mad at the poets.
Okay. And, Hotep.
That's actually a much longer piece, but I felt like it's, you know, just let it go. And let's just say that don't be mad at the poets, be mad at the systems. And to say that, you know, we are responsible for our own behaviors. Even if you can say, well, I was not raised getting that information. At some point as an adult, whatever it is that you're lacking, you have to find what that is. And you have to put the work in. So I just want to encourage everyone to not use excuses to evolve and make a transformation in your own life. With us dedicating this time to inform the listeners about what the artists, what the duty is for us to continue on. I also just want to make everyone aware of the different events that are going to be happening in Wilmington with the commemoration of 1898. And one of the first events that are coming up are going to be for this Friday down at Django's Playhouse. Is called A Halsey Affair, a Brooklyn to Brooklyn preview. So I am going to ask that this information is posted at the WHQR site. So anyone listening is free to participate in some of the events. Also, we have coming up on November the 8th, we have Black Mental Health Matters, Are We Sane in Our Paranoia? where Mama Makeda will be leading that lecture, you'll also be able to register for this Zoom at the WHQR website. And with so many events in between, the last event is the event that Speak Your Peace will be at. We will be at View 21 North on November 14th. And now the doors open up at 5, but we won't be performing until 7 p.m. You can sign up at 6:30 if you want to share some poetry or if there's some words that you want to share. You know, just make it there. This is a Black venue, Black couple. It's important that we support our Black businesses, so this information will be made available to you. And also we're celebrating the wins that we've had in this city. We're very proud of the three women that are going to be councilwomen now. And we also want to just pay a homage to Jonathan Barfield and also Clifford Barnett for running good races and also for being intricate parts of this community that we rely on, we respect, and we need. And to Mayor Sappho, my hope is that in the next 2 years that he's in office, that he truly creates some affordable housing that's affordable to people making $15 an hour. Mm. You know, that because $1,000 a month is not affordability if you're making $15 an hour. So let's make the rent match with the salary. If you're going to be charging $1,000 a month for a rental, you should be making a greater hourly rate than $15 an hour. So we just want to meet up with the times. And that's what we, when we put people in office, we want to make sure that we put people in office that are concerned about the citizens, because there's a lot to say about what's going on in the world in general. And I really don't want to give my energy to the current administration. I want to focus on what the duty of an artist is. And I want to thank you, Scale Ham Hock the Poet, and thank you, Mama Makeda, for just being outstanding to share your gifts, your time, your talent. And I am looking forward to this lecture on Saturday, Mama Makeda. So anyone listening, we're going to have this information set up so that you can register anyone that might be listening. And we're looking forward to hear from Mama Makeda, because she is a beautiful teacher. And
what's up? Thank you.
Yes. And, you know, we love and appreciate you, Mama Makeda. And, you know, Robert, I love and appreciate you. And we love and appreciate WHQR. The work that they do here at this station is phenomenal. And we need journalism that keeps it 100. And we want to thank Ben Shockman for being present, for producing this segment. And we are only better when we are together. And so those who want to come forth, Mama Harriet brought them out. For the rest of them, they might just get left behind or shot, because we don't have time to carry no dead weight. Speak Your Peace. My name is Carrie Asada. I'm the co-founder, and Scale Ham Hock the Poet is the other co-founder, a.k.a. Robert Bellamy. And we just gonna close now, okay?
Hotep.
Any Hotep. Last words before we close out?
Can I say one thing?
Sure.
When you talk about, what's it, Nina Simone in the Times and the poetry?
Yeah.
You know, if America kept up with the times, with the pavement, minimum wage today would be $26. you know, and there wouldn't be, you know, I think it's $7.25 at this time right now.
Yeah.
$7.25. Minimum wage would be $26 an hour. And people will have the money to live in these affordable houses. I don't have any. Now, what Mayor Saffo does to make the city look better, regentrification, there's another way of looking at it. Now, you can come into these neighborhoods and make them look pretty and bring business into these neighborhoods, but don't run the people out that lives in their neighborhoods. Make it affordable for them to stay in those neighborhoods. You know, and this is what is happening here with Mayor Saffo. You know, once they build these rich developments, people have to move.
Yeah.
They can't afford to live there anymore. But if they was making $26 an hour, which should be the minimum wage today, they could afford to live there. So bring up the minimum wage. $15 an hour is not no money at all.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you so much for speaking your piece. Yeah. And thank you for listening. Peace out.
Hotep.
Hotep.
An artist's duty, as far as I'm concerned, is to reflect the times. I think that is true of painters, sculptors, poets, musicians. As far as I'm concerned, it's their choice. But I choose to reflect the times and the situations in which I find myself. That, to me, is my duty. And at this crucial time in our lives, when everything is so desperate, when every day is a matter of survival, I don't think you can help but be involved. Young people, black and white, know this. That's why they're so involved in politics. We will shape and mold this country, or it will not be molded and shaped at all anymore. So I don't think you have a choice. How can you be an artist and not reflect the times? That, to me, is the definition of an artist.
That was From a Poet's Point of View, featuring artists organized by Speaky Piece NC and presented by WHQR. We hope you enjoyed this podcast, and we encourage you to explore some of the other perspectives we've featured here on WHQR Presents. I'm Ben Shockman. Thanks for listening. Fantasy, far from reality. Poetry is the language of imagination. Poetry is a form of positive.